97.9 FM and 1360 AM WCHL and UNC School of Media and Journalism present Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examination of issues of overriding importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the Carolina campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, a vote by the NCAA to tie financial payouts to academic progress. Our guest, Amy Perko, Executive Director of the Knight Commission for Intercollegiate Athletics. Amy, this is something that the Knight Commission pushed and did get passed by the NCAA. And the way it's going to work is that a part of the March Madness payouts will be based on the overall academic progress of the teams from that university, correct?
Yes, that's correct. You know, when you take a step back, the NCAA really has always controlled two really powerful incentives. One is the criteria to compete for a championship, for an NCAA championship, and two is the criteria to receive the money generated from the championship. The Knight Commission has worked over the years to promote ways in which to include educational achievements in the criteria for both of those incentives. And in 2011, the NCAA adopted one of our seminal recommendations to require teams to be on track to graduate, at least half their players to be eligible for a championship. So with that academic threshold for postseason eligibility, that certainly helped to align that particular incentive with the educational objectives. And now with this most recent action that was adopted October the 27th, the NCAA now is strengthening its commitment to the educational values by incorporating some academic-based criteria in the way in which it rewards a portion of the financial payout.
Okay, so I want to stress that it's based on academic progress of all your teams, not just your basketball team, so you can't load up, if you will, on trying to get your basketball team to have a good APR or some other measure and not worry about the rest of your teams. It's across the board academic success.
It is, and that's a really good point, because I think there's a real misunderstanding about some of where the money goes in college sports, and there is a distinct difference in terms of the college football playoff revenues as opposed to the March Madness media revenues. And when you look at college sports as a whole, obviously those two sports are generating the lion's share of the revenues. The NCAA, as your listeners know, was really established to help manage all sports, but its signature event has always been the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship, and that generates nearly 90% of the revenues that the NCAA uses for its own operations, as well as distributing back more than $500 million every year to Division I institutions. In the past and currently, basically, that payout of the $550 million to the Division I institutions, nearly 40% of that is based on the success of the men's basketball teams only in the men's basketball team tournament. The other 60% of the money is distributed based on criteria like the number of scholarships institutions provide, the number of sports they sponsor. That 60% really addresses the broad-based sports programs at the institution. And so in that same principle and philosophy, the NCAA is now incorporating this academic-based criteria for all the sports teams, and if they're able to meet this academic-based criteria, they would be rewarded with this distribution that comes out of this new academic fund that's being created.
So now, is this fund over and above the 40-60, or does it change the 40-60 split?
Well, it will change the 40-60 split, and it will reduce the emphasis placed on the performance of men's basketball teams in the tournament over time. So And that's a point the commission has argued for some time, that the emphasis on the wins in the tournament was too much for, you know, an association that really exists because of the educational mission of college sports. And we all know that certainly there are some challenges in men's basketball, and some of which are caused by the distorted incentives. You know, we believe this will make it a healthier distribution, and certainly one that's more aligned with the educational values. So over time, what will happen? The NCAA did sign last year an extension to its March Madness contract, and that was an $8.8 billion contract extension. And so it created a set of new revenues that you know, had not been yet calculated into the distribution formula. And so thanks to those new revenues, this is what enabled the schools to really come to an agreement to reward those new revenues coming in a little bit differently. And it is a phased-in approach. So beginning in 2019-20, that academic fund will be $12 million. But that will grow on an accelerated pace, so that, as an example, beginning 2024, that fund will be over $100 million to distribute to institutions that do meet that academic-based criteria. So if you look at, you know, the growth of the academic criteria fund and compare that with then the percentage of the revenues that will be distributed based on wins in the tournament, by the end of the March Madness contract, those percentages will be about equal. So it will really drop the percentage of that pie that's rewarded based on basketball performance.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Amy Perko with the Knight Commission about a new initiative by the NCAA to tie financial payouts to academic progress. So, Amy, one way that a school can display, if you will, academic progress is if you have a graduation rate that exceeds the entire student body. In other words, your athletes graduated 85%, your student body graduates at 83%, you're good to go. There are two others. What's the GSR?
The GSR is the graduation success rate, and that basically is a measurement of the athletes who enter the university, and then you take basically see how many of those athletes 6 years later have successfully completed their education at the university. So that's the graduation success rate, and that counts those who might transfer in as well. And it doesn't penalize the school for any transfers that might leave the institution but enroll at another university. The other metric and measurement or way that institutions could meet this new academic-based criteria to receive these rewards is through the institution's APR, which is the academic progress rate. And the APR differs from the graduation success rate in that the APR is a real-time measurement, measuring those athletes on the team, whether they're retained from semester to semester, and whether they are eligible from semester to semester. So there are, you know, several different criteria and ways that institutions can meet this academic-based criteria. The bottom line is that, you know, it's put in place to reward excellence. And, you know, the current NCAA distribution does reward excellence in men's basketball competitiveness through the way that it rewards basketball units and money based on success in the basketball tournament. So this new initiative is an effort to also reward academic excellence and academic achievement. The way the fund will grow at the end of the current March Madness contract, the NCAA distribution will basically change over time, so that by the end of that contract, athletic excellence is rewarded. About a quarter of the money goes toward that excellence in men's basketball, and a quarter of the money is rewarded based on academic-based criteria.
All right. So there are always critics, and the critics would say, basing this on the APR, for example, number one, the APR is a very easy system to game, so they say, especially from schools that have such extensive, mechanisms in place to help students, tutors, all that kind of stuff, or schools that are willing to bend the rules, if you will. And the other criticism is that because it's so easy that the ones who have all this will have already have an advantage. They'll continue to have an advantage.
Well, in terms of the big picture of looking at, again, all of these institutions have agreed to be a part of an association, and we know that, again, over $500 million a year is generated through March Madness. So those schools have to answer the question, how do we want to distribute this money? You know, what kind of values and what kind of behaviors do we want to incentivize? Up to this point, 40% of the money's been based on how men's basketball teams do in the tournament. And it's been the Knight Commission's view that that incentive has been weighted way too heavily on winning for an association that says the number one priority is the academic success of the athletes. And so, you know, with any metric, there's going to be criticisms of it. I'll go back to in 2001, the only metric that was used at that time was the federally mandated graduation rate methodology. And there are critics of that because it does penalize institutions for students, all students who transfer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as you know, about 40% of all students in today's universities transfer. So the NCAA and the institutions really argued against using the federally mandated rate as some type of punitive system or even as a rate to reward all the incentives. Because of the flaws in that methodology, and that's why the APR and the GSR were created. I think that I don't think anyone can argue that the data show since the APR and the GSR have been put into place and the disincentives have been put in place as well in terms of requiring a threshold of being on track to graduate half your players to be eligible for competing in championships. Since that's been put in place, the graduation success rates have risen by more than 12%. So, you know, the bottom line, there's about 20,000 more athletes who have graduated than the number that would have graduated had the regulations just, you know, maintained and the trends maintained themselves based on the trends at that time. So whatever data you use to measure graduation success, academic success, whether it be the federal rate, the graduation success rate, the APR, all those have been increasing and are at record highs. And so the bottom line, it means that, the academic system that and rules that have been put in place, the incentives and disincentives, have had the overall impact of improving the academic success of athletes.
Sports Focus. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with Amy Perka with the Knight Commission about a redistribution of funds coming out of the men's basketball tournament to schools whose athletes show academic progress as measured by one of three metrics. Amy, I want to zoom out a little bit because this topic raises the issue that Knight Commission has spent a lot of time on, and that is how do schools spend this money? Wherever the money comes from, how do they spend it? North Carolina, for example, the change in what's spent on the average student that number is down by 6%, whereas what you spend on athletes is up by 4%. Not a huge difference there, but the ACC as a whole is up by 23%, how much money gets spent on athletes, and up by only about 10% on what schools spend on average students. Is that a problem?
Well, the Knight Commission has focused on, you know, where the money goes in college sports, and the commission's priority has been to look at ways to ensure that the health and safety needs and protections of athletes are being met, the academic experience and academic success of athletes is also fully supported in the allocation of revenues. And then those need to be the two priorities for allocating the budget and the revenues. And we have produced, you know, data and tried to help better inform the public as well as decision makers about, you know, what the data show in terms of where that money is going. We've had concerns over the past number of years, and particularly over the past decade, when there's been a huge influx of money, particularly into those schools in the ACC, in the Big Ten, the SEC, what's known as the Power Five conferences. The data show that coaches' salaries and facility enhancements have disproportionately been the beneficiaries of these increased revenues. And the commission has recommended ways, new approaches, and perhaps new regulations to ensure that greater percentages of the money are being designated for athlete education and health and safety. At this time, there is really no regulations that requires certain percentages of the money be spent in those areas, and that's certainly an area and a topic that we want to pursue more with schools and conferences.
Yeah, now some numbers that really jump off the page from your database has to do with football spending. At UNC, up by 11%. The ACC as a whole, up by 17%. At Clemson, up by 32%. So it seems like a lot of this new money is going toward football.
Well, yeah, and again, the data do show that there are some, in our view, some areas that have disproportionately benefited. One might say, well, football certainly generates the lion's share of the revenue, but again, you know, these are operated as activities of a nonprofit entity, the universities, for the mission of the educational mission. And, you know, one of the different ways in which football operates is the college football playoff also generates more than $500 million a year just for the schools in the football bowl subdivision to distribute and divide. Now, the NCAA does not control that pot of money, and so that's certainly separate than what I talked about earlier with regard to the NCAA's revenue distribution. And one step that we would like to see, or one change we would like to see occur, is that a portion of that money from the college football playoff really be used to contribute to the overall cost of running football as a national collegiate sport for some of the services in certainly health and safety, concussion research, insurance, catastrophic insurance. All those are currently paid for through the March Madness revenues. And, you know, we feel like there's certain changes need to happen to, you know, make the college football monies more accountable to the collective good of college sports.
It all comes down to there's a whole lot of money coming in, and how does it get spent back out? And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Amy Perko. Thanks also to engineer Dylan Field. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall at the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a service of UNC School of Media and Journalism.